Okay, so by way of review, I know it's so simple, but it's so useful to keep remembering that this is the land of eight vicissitudes, not four. This is not supposed to be the heavenly realms. This is what happens here is pleasant and unpleasant experiences do and will forever happen. And so, when they're unpleasant, we tend to think there's a problem. And our little protector, busy mind, has been my executive assistant for my life, tries to fix it. And when it's pleasant, tries to hang on to that and I'll get more of that. Believes that that's the solution and that's the way to happiness. It's the way to survival, for sure. It's the way to comfort, for sure. But deep happiness, it is not the way. It's an exhausting and often futile attempt. And so spiritual practice is another way that's a much more effective, much more reliable way for well-being than the grasping and the resisting of the little mind to the ups and downs of the eight vicissitudes. So we need to keep reminding ourselves of this because we don't believe it. We do believe it intellectually, maybe. It makes perfect sense. But in fact, the way we live, we don't believe that. We really think we have to deal with the problems. And when we apply spiritual wisdom and a wise approach to the downs of the eight vicissitudes, they're no longer problems. They simply are downs. They're simply unpleasantness or awkwardness or discomfort or worry or whatever they may be. And so the problems, we don't solve them by that means. They dissolve their problemness. Problems dissolve. Downs stay, sadness stays, hurt stays, worry stays, but the issue that we think we have to fix, that's an extra relationship that dissolves. And so the well-being is a different relationship to life. It doesn't mean life then all comes blissful. It's that we are okay with how it is. And so the issue maker relaxes. And the issue maker is me, is the ego. And that stops functioning that way. At least it does. It doesn't just like one day, unfortunately. It doesn't one day you wake up and you don't have an ego. I'm sorry to say. It's not that simple. But it lightens up and it doesn't take itself so seriously. And it, that little executive assistant behavior, does its job less and less and less and with less seriousness and less pressure. And so it's habitual that it's going to like the pleasant and want more chocolate and it's going to resist the unpleasant. But it doesn't do its job so seriously. And so we become lighter. It's called enlightenment. One of the words, the feeling is not so stressful. So it's just this little review, putting the context around this. And so this weekend, the focus has been, for those two who weren't here yesterday, the theme is relax. Because the little one who's trying so hard, the little ego part, the busy mind that's trying to do all the grasping and the resisting and the fixing and rearranging and apparently help us, is tense. It's a tension response to life. And when it relaxes, the problem maker has relaxed and life is not a problem. It's very relaxing is a key piece to awakening. A moment of realizing something is a moment of relief. It's like, oh, what was I thinking? Oh, I didn't realize that was what was happening. Of course, that's what was happening. Something just melts. It's a relaxing. Relaxing of confusion, relaxing of need, relaxing of worry. It comes along, it's a feeling of surrender. It's a feeling of opening up, letting things be, ah, like that. And we have those moments all day. I was getting all so worried about it, and so, okay, what? It's a kind of almost giving up sometimes. Giving up, what are we giving up? The struggle, the push, the strain, the trying to rearrange. I call it, as you know who know me, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. A lot of what we do is ridiculous, and I use the word neurotic. It's neurotic mental activity. But it's because it works to give us a bit more comfort that we do it and we believe in it, but in a deep way. So it relatively works, which is why we'll keep on doing it. But we can do it lightly. Joseph Goldstein has this lovely phrase, when we really understand, not intellectually, but in a deep experiential way, the truth of this, then we can play in both realities. We can play in the relative reality where the little one makes us comfortable and those activities are worthwhile. And we can play in freedom from that. It turns it into this sort of, we're sort of playing on this human realm with this mind. But when we don't have any experience of the deep truth of this, there's no playing. It's really grim. You know, we really take ourselves seriously. And when anyone insults this little one, we really take ourselves seriously. Like the most intensely we feel our separate sense of self is when someone's insulted us, or threatened us. It's like, how dare you? We get very big. And when there's none of that happening, there's just a sweet moon in the sky. It's not there. So it's a deluded sense of ourselves. Anyway, relaxing. So we began yesterday relaxing the body, and we want to always do that. It's not we begin and then we move on to another step and we forget that step. That's part of what we're doing all the time. Relax your body frequently, frequently. Check as we did frequently in your life, in your meditations, today, all the time. Relaxing the body was the first one I suggested. Then I also suggested not just the physical body and the unfurrowing frown lines. I know I talk a lot, but yesterday afternoon I was checking you out. And there was fewer, but there were still considerable frown lines. Don't frown. When people do longer retreats, one of the things about the result of the retreat, people say it's a Botox retreat. It's like you've gone back 10 years because you just have less wrinkles. Because in the face softens. It's, you know, it's just like, it's cheaper than Botox. And then there's the not just the physical body, but the energy bodies I was mentioning here, that relax that pushing, relax that gripping, relax that holding yourself together, relax the uptight, if you can, whenever you can notice that, just like, oh. And for me, one of the ways that happens, energy body happens, is, and this is just my nature, is I'm forward by nature. I'm out there, and I'm a doer by nature, and as a kid, I was a pusher kind of a kid, bossy, that kind of a kid, Aries, you know, competitive, a lot of energy. And so for me, when that energy body relaxes, it steps back. It can rest back. There's something else holding. There's awareness, there's wisdom back here, and I can be held back in that. It's a surrendered, relaxed backing up. I know it's true for lots of people, but it's not true for lots of people too. It just happens to be one energy way that I'm familiar with in myself. You get to understand your own ways. So energy body, and another one is the opening of the energy body feel. Because when it's tense, there's a closed feeling, right? There's a kind of pulled in feeling. And you'll find your own, you know, you'll learn your own inner languages and words for your own language. So I'm just trying to express some of the way it is for me. And then relaxing the emotions. Now, you can't relax an emotion. Emotion is a wave that you're not in charge of that comes. It just sort of rises. Kind of sort of washes through. There was a very fascinating book that's, I think, really worth reading if you're interested at all in meditation. Obviously, you are. Is called My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolte Taylor. I've mentioned her many times. She's one of the still... Every day they reassess these, apparently, the five most popular TED Talks. And it's this neuroanatomist woman who had a stroke on her left hemisphere and understood what it was because she was a neuroanatomist and took 10 years to be able to speak again and to be able to use that linear aspect of her, which was, in her case, incredibly developed. She was the youngest And it takes great brain power to be able to be a neuroanatomist. I mean, it's, you know, not an average occupation. Anyway, she then explained her experience, but the actual direct experience, when her left hemisphere was completely occluded by this blood clot, damaged, she was only able to function in the right hemisphere. And the right hemisphere, she called it nirvana. And she was not a Buddhist. She was not a meditator. She had no access to that. I mean, not no access, but her, she was really so predominantly left hemisphere. And yeah, she said it was such a lovely experience to be able to receive, to be able to perceive, to be able to feel, to sense, without having to explain and direct and rearrange deck chairs all the time. And it's a fascinating book. Now, why did I say that? Yeah, she says, because she knows this stuff, that she studied brains, that's what her job is that an emotion, when we have an emotion, and we often use the word flooded by emotion, when it's a wave, so they take 90 seconds. You can measure them. And so check your own. When you'll have a thought of something, or a sound will remind you of something, and you'll have a little wave rush through. How we relax, because you can't stop that, it just is. What the relaxing then with emotion is making space for it. Because often it comes and it's unpleasant oftentimes. Sometimes it's a thrill, it's a rush that's pleasant. But what happens when we have pleasant and unpleasant eight vicissitudes happening is the pleasant ones we grab onto, we want more of, and the unpleasant ones we struggle against, we resist, worry about, or whatever, get entangled in trying to fix or stop or repress. Well, we want to relax the reaction. Not the thing itself, but that reaction. So instead, we want to say, oh, whoa, that's unpleasant, you know, or like, whoa, worrying. Oh, that's so sad. To allow it to be there, make space. Not to suppress or to do anything different, not to do anything with it. Simply make space, honor it to move through our experience. That's how we relax with emotion. It's not what we typically do. We're typically sucked right into them and then we're doing whatever the thing apparently demands of us. It didn't demand anything. We thought we had to do something about it. So don't. We make space. And here's a word that I think is a very useful word that meditators can use, and I use a lot. We make space for something, and it doesn't necessarily go away. We aren't just saying, I'm making space for it to go away, hurry up and move through the space. We're simply making space, and if it doesn't move through very fast, what we end up doing is holding it. Now then, here's an image that Ajahn Suchito uses, and it's a very, very good image. He says that there's two... Basically, it's like the right and left hemisphere, which I use a lot from reading Jill Bolte Taylor. But there are these two parts of the mind. One is the linear, controlling, manipulative left hemisphere part. He says that's called manas. That's the word for this in the Pali language. I should put this on my head, even though I don't want to. I will, so I can turn my head and talk to you without you losing the volume. Manas, M-A-N-A-S, and he says it's like our fingers. And it's manipulative, and it's fiddly, and it controls and pushes and pulls and does things. And the other is citta, which is like the heart part of the mind, which is like the right hemisphere. And he says that's like the palm. And so when I use the word hold, I mean the way we hold something in our palms, not the way we hold something with our fingers, which is sometimes tightly gripped, grabbed, held onto. It's not holding on, it's holding like that, with an open palm. The palm is an open, like a bowl. And so when I say hold the feeling, you know, so you're having sadness, like a wash through of sadness, we make space for it, but it's here. Can I allow it to be here? Tenderly, let it keep on being here if it's keeping on being here. Is it? Sorry. This is the worst part of this job, is sort of getting wired up. Okay, emotions. And now we're going to come today to the mind itself. Relax the mind. Well, how on earth do you relax the mind? You do with practice. So here are several little ways that today I want you to pay attention to the activity of your mind. It's the thought production part of the mind, the busy. When you're busy inside, how can we relax that? Different ways. As best we can, like little kids, la, 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 you just go shh. And that can actually sometimes help it. But you have to do it gently, like it's a little kid or a puppy. You don't want to do it, you know, with a big heavy stick. Beat it up. I had an experience. I remember this so clearly, and I've told this a few times. I was in a retreat, and it was a long retreat, and I'd done a lot of practice for years. But I was really watching my mind, and I was getting fairly quiet, I have to admit. And because I have these images inside, I've told this so many times, whatever's going on, it has a corresponding imagery happening. It just is the way my brain functions. And so I was doing walking meditation in this meditation center, and I don't like that ringing sound. And closer instead of further away to stop that ringing. Sorry. I want an implant or something. That would be better. A thought would come into my mind. I was walking meditation, going very concentrated, very quiet, and a thought would come. In the image of the thought was this big white bird like a swan, and its wings were going out, and it was about to take off and be a bunch of thoughts. And so I didn't want it to do that. I was trying to get quiet. And so then this bird image would do this, and then down would come this sledgehammer. And that would be, you know, white feathers scattered. It was really harsh. That's trying too hard. It's not an appropriate, friendly way of being with it, you know. But shh would be actually much kinder and maybe more effective. So that's one way. Another way, and this takes, as you can see, it's the image for me that really works is having two parts to the mind. There's the front part of the mind, which is the left hemisphere. It's the busy part, the fingers, which are very quickly liking, not liking, wanting, you know, judging, commenting, that busy part. And then this shy part in the background, this wise part that's watching over the whole thing. That's kind of like back there, seeing this is what's happening. It's like the right hemisphere is much quieter and much more shy than the busy forward one. And so it's the back one that's saying, shh, or it's okay, or enough, or relax. It's your wise, but it's subtle, it's shy, so you have to get quiet to pay attention to even know it's there. It's there, all right, but it's like outshone by all of the noisy little children part, all the little fingers that's so loud. So we need this mindfulness to be able to access whoever it is, that part of ourselves, our wisdom part that's able to say shh, shh, shh. But that also, that also is the part that another way of going shh is like to stop adding comments, judgments, opinions, stories, movies, making it into something, explaining, rearranging, planning. I'm just going to do this, and then I'm going to do this with it, and how did this? And it, stop adding all that stuff. Like, you don't have to make a comment about everything, but you do, you know, you're in there quietly, nice silent retreat, nothing going on, ordinary kind of day, not even sunny to comment on, nothing. And yet you're going to have all these comments about, oh, this, look at that, I think I want one of those, and why is she, her shoes aren't matching, and da-da-da, you know, we just, like, drop all the commentary. We sort of feel we have to keep telling it as it's happening all the time to explain it to ourselves to make sure it's all okay and we know what's going on or something. Drop the commentary. There's a tea, you can buy tea, the brand is called Constant Comment. Should all have a box to remind ourselves. Another, and these are just ways to help your mind perceive this and see if this is appropriate for you. Again, remember these are dishes on a smorgasbord. This isn't instructional. This is just for you to check out for yourself and see. Is what the mind does. Sorry about this frog in my throat. what the little fingers do is that they're interested in content. They're interested in what is happening. The words, the smells, the conversations, the dramas, the what's going on. And this part of the mind is interested in how we are with that. And we're wanting to develop how we are with it, not it. But the commenting and the little fingery part, the front part, is all about what's going on. This is happening, that is this is good, this isn't so good, don't know about this, da-da-da. We're on that sort of engaged front edge of it. But way back here, it's like, oh, liking this, concerned about that, not bothering with this. See what I'm saying? It's how we are. And this is what we want to grow. Because this, actually, how we are with the stuff, is what makes our happiness or our unhappiness. It's not whether it's the 8 vicissitudes or the 4 vicissitudes or pleasantness or unpleasantness that makes us happy. What makes us happy, peaceful, content, is how we're relating to those things. And so we want to pay attention to how we are with it, not it. But we've been habituated to look at it. And so this is the shift that meditation brings. This is my attention looking, my fingers looking at it. Okay, I'm going to look at how I am. What's going on in here when this is happening? What's happening with this? How is this responding to that? It's about the responding, not about the content, right? I use the word content. Content and process. What's the process going on inside me when this content shows up, when these phenomena are experienced? So a way to relax our mind is to relax the fingers of the mind, the manipulative, reactive ones, and see, how is this? What's happening? What's this feel like? Another way that people use to help relax the fingers of the mind, the forwardness of the mind, the busyness of the left hemisphere of that activity, is to, again, using your mindful awareness, which is back here, is to say, thinking, is to name. That's what's happening. Oh, look at all that thinking. And sometimes, depending on how familiar you are with this as a technique and how much you've used it or how accessible this is to your particular experience, is not just thinking, but what kind of thinking? Planning, worrying. Judging. And you can get really good at like whining. blaming. Because the part that's able to recognize it isn't this part, it's this part. And when you put your attention to this, you're withdrawing your attention from this. You've only got so much attention. And if it's all taken up with this activity, you don't know that you're doing all this because the knowing isn't functioning. But the more we are aware of knowing this, there's less energy put into this part. And so it goes like this. And then it's going da-da-da-da-da-da. More energy is further back here. Da-da-da-da-da-da. More energy is further back here. And so it's not taken so seriously, which is why you can play with, you know, I like this, I want more chocolate, but it's a bit of a joke, because the knower is like, look at you, your chocolate thing going on. But the back part here is understanding what this little part, is that making sense? This is the way it works for me. And so we're relaxing this forward, manipulative, grabby bit by engaging increasingly the behind-the-scenes knower. And that one is wisdom, and that part isn't just knowing and isn't just wise. It's actually, that's what kindness comes from. That's what friendship is. When we're with a friend and we're really being friendly, we want to understand and care about what's going on. We're not busily saying, you should be like this, and I'm like this, and I want this. We're not filling up the space with our fingers. We're not talking all the time and getting our agenda worked out. And we're like, how are you today? We're available. When we're more relaxed, we're more quiet, we're not so pushy, invasive. There's more space. And there's more space for us to be who we are and how we are, and more space for life to be as it is. But when our little ego is in there, it's, I want this and more of this and less of this, it's sort of in the way. And it's in the way of a friendship. Friendship has to have space for it to be friendship, doesn't it? You know, as soon as you impose your agenda on somebody, you're actually not being friendly. You're using them to get your whatever it is needs met or something. So to be a friend, we need to be back here and more open and wiser and therefore kinder. Relax the doing, fingers. Rest in being, open palm. That's what my note says. Yeah, so the doing is this, and the being is the palm of our experience. And somebody said that yesterday when I said something about why we're here, and it was like, I want to do less and be more, somebody over here. We want to be more palm experience and less manipulative. And when we're palm experiencing, it's restful. It's relaxed. And the doing is not. The doing is stressful, tense, exhausting, and futile often. And so the palm is another way to help relax this doing of the mind, is the palm part, the wise part, the back part, is it's not just open, it's not just quiet, it's not just making space. Another word that I love about the accessing this part of our brains, our wisdom, is it's receiving. It receives what's happening. We don't think that we're receiving life. We're mostly doing things with people and things and life and ourselves, but it's passive. And in a passive way, when we're alert and we're present, we're not missing things because we're just too dull or unavailable, we're open, and then in the openness we're actually receiving our life. Our life is coming. It's coming in through our eyes and our ears and into our hearts and moving through us. We're receiving it, consciously receiving your life. Receiving and then holding if it's staying. Receiving it, letting it flow through if it's going. And then two other little things to add to this. I love this, I look this up, I do this with words, I love words, is the word respect. Respect. Re is again a repeat, you know. And spect is from spectator, spectacles, it's Latin word to see. Respect is to see again. And when you respect something or someone, let's say someone, you respect that person, you're seeing them again. And you're re-seeing them yet again, and this is a real person, and this person is this, and you're seeing more of this person because you're letting more of them in. We lose respect when we already have imposed a judgment on somebody, or we've put them in some kind of box, or we're not seeing them at all, we're just using them, you know, for our needs or something. That's not respect. Respect is to, oh, I see you again. Oh, it's you again. Oh, how are you now? It's like seeing it fresh again and again and again. The situation, ourselves, it's another person. Respect. I love that. And we can't see in that way, that inner seeing, when our fingers are busy and we're commenting and judging and telling stories and running our little dramas, making our movies of things. We're not actually available to see what's really going on. And the freedom that comes as we meditate is we do that less and less because that's so tense and it's so interfering and it's distorting all of this manipulative storytelling. It's not actually seeing what's really going on. It's interfering. A phrase, and I don't know much about this practice at all, but in the Vajrayana practice, one of the phrases about meditating is called cleaning or clearing, cleaning the view. The way we're seeing, we want to let it be more and more clear what actually is going on, not what we think is going on or we want to be going on or our judgments about something. This is good, this is not good. If but what is really happening inside us, outside us, in other people, between things. We want to see clearly. Vipassana means seeing clearly. That's what it means. And so obviously we have to relax these fingers which are causing distortion and making little opinions and making a spin on something. Relax all that and then you'll be able to see more clearly what's really going on. Another image that's used is that this manipulative busyness of mind is churny. And it's like, two images again came into my mind, but one of them is like wind blowing on water. And you can't actually see what's going on in the water because the waves are all disturbing the surface. But as you quieten this down, you quieten the mind down, you relax more, the fingers stop fiddling, then the waves settle, and then you can actually see right into the water. You can see deeply what's going on. But you can't when there's all this interference happening. And that's a great image, I think. Okay, I think those are enough words. Oh yes, one other piece I've written with a big circle around it. In this relaxing, in this backing up, in this letting go of the comment and the stories and the busyness of the mind, and this receptive, open, quiet seeing. This is a doorway, this way, to freedom, obviously. But one of the characteristics of this is more and more and more space, more and more bigness. This overview, this awareness of what's happening is vast. We can experience an enormous vastness of consciousness. Whereas this, the front edge, manipulating, involved with detail, is tiny and busy and rapid and many, sort of many-fold. This is kind of unified vastness. And just a word I want to put in, because as we experience quietening down of the thinking and more backing up and seeing more, there's this feeling of like, wow. And we can experience awareness as being an aspect of our being which is just massive. And that itself feels a relief, whereas the small separate feels tight and is tense. It's a very tight, small place to be. What do you mean? How dare you say that to me? It's like, argh. And when that drops away, it's like, wow. And one of the pleasures, in a way, of a moment of freedom is this unbinding of the tension. It's also a description in some Buddhist, I don't even know who or what, who said this, it's repeated many times, is the experience of dying is like that ultimate feeling of stepping out of a tight shoe. But it's like we can die all day long, little moments of stepping out of a tight shoe or undoing a corset. I can't imagine being in the era of corsets, women, you know. You can actually take the corset off and wear a nightie. Oh, God. Delicious. Think of it like that. This little self is like so uptight. So relax. So these are some of the ways to help you relax the mind. So this is what we'll focus on today. Okay? Any questions? Hi.
I find that description so helpful with the palms and the fingers and chitta and palm. I'm just struck by in yoga in Sanskrit, that's exactly what they say, that yoga chitta, riki, nirvana, which I understand to mean that is the set of the rikis, the fluctuations.
Okay. Yes, 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 it's all the same. It's all the same. You can actually take spiritual teachings from almost any tradition, not that I've tried extensively to do this, and you discover it's actually the same thing. Because awakening, a moment of awakening, freedom from the constraints of the active ego, feels the same. You know, it doesn't matter what language you're speaking or what era you're from or what, you know, who the teacher was. They're trying to express in their particular idiom an experience. Because this is not theory, this is experience. Ancient, perennial, yeah, eternal, perennial, human, and you know, I'm just using the English language because that's my language, but yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Okay, you're welcome. Anyone else?